This is the regular meeting of Board of Education, April 24th, 2007.
How are you?
Just right there.
That's what we need to look at. I want to know if Mr. Cox is homework this time.
Yes.
That's a stretch.
You got time.
Yes, Steve. I'm writing a book. Okay. Oh, okay.
This is what changed, if you're wondering.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the April 24th meeting of the Board of Education of West Covina Unified School District. This evening's meeting is called order 7:02, and we'll begin the evening with an invocation and flag salute. Invocation by Max Spence, flag salute by George Holt.
Kind of gracious, my Father, we're grateful for the opportunity we have to gather here as the West Covina Unified School District Board of Trustees and as concerned parents and staff and students. We're grateful for the opportunity we have to be in West Covina and for the progress that has been made here, and we ask that thy blessing be on this meeting, that it would be one that continues that progress. And this we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Cox?
Here.
Mr. Spence?
Here.
Mr. Shoemaker?
Here.
Mr. Fuller?
Here.
Mrs. Polis?
Here.
Mr. Richardson?
Here.
Mrs. Christine?
Here.
Thank you. This evening we have three presentations before the board. First off, I'd like to take this opportunity to recognize not only somebody who's been very influential, very helpful, and certainly a great asset to our school district, but he's also been a good friend for a long time. Officer Don Fernald, I saw somebody in a uniform walking around.
He's
here.
Back.
There we go. Okay. I'll read a little excerpt just to embarrass him a bit further. Officer Fernald has been active part of the West Covina schools for over 28 years. From 1980 to 85, while as an officer in the traffic division, Don gave instruction on bicycle and traffic safety at various schools. In 1999, he served as a school resource officer for the GREAT program at Holland Crest and Edgewood Middle Schools. And in 2001, he took over the community relations office and started teaching in the elementary schools until his departure in March of 2007. Don and his wife, Jennifer, who happens to be a supervisor for the West Covina Community Center, have three daughters, five children with a sixth one on the way, Don?
Grandchildren.
To offer this to you as a recognition for all the work that you've done in the city. This is a Officer Don Fernald with much appreciation for your contribution and service to the youth of West Covina, April 24th, 2007. And if I may say, I've been doing this for 12 years, 13 years, something like that. We've never given anything quite like this. And I'm very proud to be able to do this for you. And quite honestly, I think this is very evident of what you've done and what you've contributed to the city and to the school
district. Don, do you want to tell the audience where you're going?
Home.
Not immediately following this?
Take my wife to dinner.
Good. Good answer. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Next, I'd like to take another extraordinary opportunity to recognize the East San Gabriel Valley Reading Teacher of the Year, Jennifer Bocanegra. And Jackie, if you'd like to get up and say a few words, appreciate it. Thank you.
It is my pleasure to introduce Jennifer Bocanegra, first grade teacher at Vine Elementary. The school has had the pleasure for having her for 10 years, five of those while I have been there. Talk about a passionate, loving teacher who loves kids, her classroom, and literacy. And it's not one, two, and three, it's all at the same level. If you've not had the opportunity to visit her classroom, please come by when she is teaching, as well as at our open house in June. But the reading, the singing, the writing, that goes on in her room, what she gets out of her first graders is unbelievable. And to put it into words, I really can't. I, again, invite you to come and see her. So I'm now going to go ahead and present Jennifer. So congratulations.
The West Covina Unified School District Board of Education recognizes Jennifer Bocanegra, East San Gabriel Valley Reading Teacher of the Year, April 24th, 2007.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You, thank you for all your questions.
And I know she did have a couple of people she wanted to just introduce.
First of all, thank you for the honor. I really appreciate it. And I'd like to introduce my wonderful husband over there taking some pictures because he knows I love pictures. My sister Allison Espinosa, my nephew Anthony Espinosa, and my young 87-year-old grandmother who's here today. Also, we have some staff members. I really appreciate your support. I wore my heels so I'd be tall now. Brenda Hall, Jessica Kane, and Jennifer Lau. I really appreciate your support today, and thank you for honoring me with coming to honor me, I guess you should say. Thank you very much, everybody. I appreciate
you. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for all those that are here to support. Appreciate it very much. And our last but not least presentation is Monta Vista School.
Thank you.
I'm going to invite Mr. Despard to come up. He gets to be the master of technology by clicking. So good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the school board, Mr. President, Madam Superintendent, and Cabinet. It's our pleasure to come present for Monta Vista. Let me get us at least in the right spot here. There you go. As you know, Monta Vista was recognized as a California Distinguished School and a Title I Achieving School, so these are proud titles that we hold, and we're very excited to share with you that we are doing everything we can to continue to hold those and uphold those standards for our school. We have a clear and shared focus, just as we do at this district in our school, and we have a mission statement. And our mission statement basically states that we not only believe about the academic achievement, but also in educating the whole child. Responsibility, self-discipline, setting goals, and respect. So we look at the child as a whole in our school. So first I'm going to talk and share about the data, because that's what everyone likes to see at Monta Vista. We have, over the years, gone up 154 points. We're doing quite well since 1999. We have seen a little bit of struggle this past year, but we know that we're on the right track and good things are happening at our school, and we're watching very closely our data to make sure that we are on that right track. If you look at our significant subgroups, you can see between 2000 and 2006 that our Hispanics have gone up 165 points, and our socioeconomic disadvantaged students have also gone up 157 points. While it's not exactly where we want to be, because, of course, the goal is to be everyone at 800 or above, it is right along where we need to be, and we're doing a great job with that, and the teachers are looking at those children and targeting specific interventions for them. In our next slide, you can see with the AMOs, or the annual measurable objective, our subgroups are above where they need to be. We're on track of meeting that next goal of, 36.2% for the next level that needs to happen. So we know we're going to make it. We know we're going to do a good job with that. If you look at our next slide, this is about the gender, and you can see there's some, it's in percentages. Some discrepancies between male and female. We've had some intervention classes that we've really targeted some of our students that fall into those categories, but it's not consistent. One year it might be boys, the next year it might be girls. It's just back and forth, and we're trying to pinpoint and find out exactly why. Unfortunately, children don't have a book, and we can't, peel open and look into their brain, but we're doing everything we can to get them to tell us their story so that we can meet their needs. But with the district, as you know, we have goals and expectations here, and one of them is that high standards and expectations. And we believe there are no victims, that we are enablers in our district, and that we are going to give them every tool possible to be successful. So we give them the standards, we set those bars for them, and we let them fly as high as they can without limiting them. And we do this through a variety of ways. But I think it's mostly that communication with the PTA, with the school site council, with the teachers, and everybody working together, that we're able to let everybody know what our expectations are. Our next slide has to do with the school interventions. As I said, we've recognized that we have children that struggle. We've done, I think the one, two, three, mastery learning is probably the one that we've done the most on to try to pinpoint children that are struggling. And what we have been doing, and it's in math, have taken and assessed kids basically on a weekly basis and programmed them into an area that they need focus on in order to help meet their standards. And right now, we're doing it in math. We regroup almost every week to then say, and I'll use Mr. Despard as an example. Last week, he did really good in percentages, so he went to a class that was a little bit more of an acceleration. This week, I'm sorry, in decimals, he had a hard time. Just didn't quite get it. So we're going to put him in a group that gets a little more remediation. So we target children, basically, and we watch their data weekly with that. So with interventions, that's what we do in the school day, and then after hours, we also have the interventions that we offer. But we know during the school day, we can capture them. It's not dependent on transportation or whether there's babysitting or such. So this is what we've done during the school day. Our curriculum instruction, you're familiar with it. We use the next slide. The core curriculum, we do a lot of staff development, and we have the coaches that help and support with that. Our, I guess, main focus is with the curriculum is engagement. You're all looking at me. Doesn't mean you're engaged. Some of you are thinking about your shopping list. Some of you think about tomorrow's laundry, whatever it is. But we're really monitoring and looking how are children truly, truly engaged into their curriculum and understanding of what's happening. Our next slide has to do with that monitoring. At Monta Vista, we have what are we call data days. Teachers look at the data not only weekly in our area for the mastery of learning, but we do it by quarter, in which the teachers create action plans and monitor children's growth. We do formal and informal assessments, and so we are monitoring frequently. We are looking at where each child is and getting to know them as individuals. That goes along with is we're monitoring professional development. Not only do we educate our teachers, but I have some of them, I'll recognize them in a little bit. We have some classified. We have our aides, our custodians, our secretarial. We try to provide professional development for everybody because we realize it is a team. It is just not an individual at our school that can make our children or help support our children and our families be successful. That's one more. That's all right. But with that, all of those pieces is that high levels of collaboration and communication. If I don't communicate with you what I'm going to do at my school, I'm not going to be able to have the support that I need. So we recognize at Monta Vista that we need to be very transparent about what we're doing so we can inform people what's happening, they can be part of that decision making, and then go forth and identify what we need to do. So teachers are able to meet us, as you can see in that little corner with the picture. I mean, the teachers are getting down and dirty. They're sitting on the floor. They're looking at their data. They're sorting out things that they need to do. They're communicating. They're having that opportunity to discuss students. We send out parent calendars. I have some of my PTA here who I'll recognize in just a minute, who are part of all of this because, as I said, we are a team at Monta Vista, and that's every stakeholder. Effective use of fiscal and human resources. Don't you like to hear that, Reuben? maximizing our resources. Are we using our funds the way they're intended to be used, and are we using them purposefully and intentionally? And we're monitoring that very closely. Our supportive learning environment, as I said, we look at the whole child, not just the academics. While that is very important, but we recognize some children need a little bit of sports to keep them attached to those academics. Some children come from homes that have significant issues that we need to address so that they can be successful. So that we know each child individually. Try to be visible on the campus, but I think I'm pretty good. My goal is to learn 5 or 6 new names every week so that in the next couple of years, I'll actually know every student by name, but at least I recognize them by face because every child has that right to be identified and to be acknowledged. We have done some enrichment classes that I think are unique to give that supportive environment. We have a chess club that we started this year that's been very, very successful. It started off as, oh, you're the nerds, and now there's a waiting list. Wow. Everybody wants to be in it. We have the gifted and talented. We have some special things for them. We've had Alliance of Law, which is a teacher that has been a lawyer who teaches the children about the law, and they host a trial, which is quite exciting. And this past year was the first year we went to Mount SAC, and I'm proud to say we had quite a few of our children place. So we're looking at also those enrichment activities to give them the supporting learning environment. The effective teacher and staff evaluations. As you know, that in order to be successful, you need to know the areas that you need to grow in. So I provide frequent feedback. We have a lot of informal conversations, formal conversations as it needs to take place. And the goals that teachers set are based on the California teaching standards so that they're purposeful and intentional as well. And go ahead and go to the next slide. And then the last is that high levels of parent and community involvement. It takes a whole team, and we recognize that. One of the things that have been was very exciting is we had a collaboration with UCLA and SC Johnson, in which they did a whole asthma awareness training on our campus and as part of a research project. And I realize Maria Motza is really the one to thank for this because she brought it to our district, and there's multiple schools in our district that have been involved with it. But that's getting the community involved and reaching out to a population that struggles with asthma, and we have a significant population on our campus with that miss school. And so if we can educate the parents about how to keep their homes in a healthier environment, we're going to get the kids in school and able to learn. So we do things of that. We had the Rotary who came and donated some time with us and got kids' shoes this past year. So we reach out as much as we can to the community to provide the services we need. And we work with our, as I said, our fabulous PTA and the parents that are also here to bring them in as well to be that voice to say, whoa, as a parent, this is what we need so that we can work with them. So that is a little bit about Monta Vista and the wonderful things that we're doing. So as Monta Vista staff and on our blustery day, you can see our hair blowing there, we want to thank you for our ongoing support. And in the audience who wanted to kind of recognize, we have several parents. My parents, raise your hands here so you can see. And staff, if you'll kind of... I didn't go through. Come on. Don't be embarrassed. We have class here. And I know everybody was here for me instead of, you know, Don Fernald, right? all my fellow colleagues, right? But we wish to thank you for the opportunity to share things about Monta Vista. So is there any questions? Or I know I talk fast.
Sure.
Do you have information you can share with us about the transition of ELL students?
The quantity of students. This
year, transition rate is?
Right now, this year we did 19, which is about 20%, 19%, somewhere in there, students that have transitioned. We watch it closely. I can say...
It's 19? Okay.
We have 19 students.
And that's about 20%?
About 20. We had 90 EL students identified.
Okay.
But with people that move in and out, so I'm going to give you a rough estimate because obviously it'll change weekly with the students that come in. And that's pretty average, about 20% of our population. If you look at our fifth grade, I think we have, since the students that we've had since kindergarten, I think we have one right now that was in the program in kindergarten that has not trans gone through the process, and we're looking at him very carefully to find out if there's other reasons why. We monitor it very closely. I have a teacher, Martha Martinez, who does an incredible job actually tracking that and looking at, and we provide after-school support and tutoring to help give them the language development they need in order to be successful.
Yes. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to just take a five-minute break, if you wouldn't mind. Just be with us. Thank you. 7:30.
And then I'll take this out. I knew it was going to be 2 days today.
Oh, a field day, huh?
Coming just in time.
I should hope so.
Thank you.
Carolina. Yeah, but which one? Tell her one to equip them with people you're in all the
I know that wasn't about me to begin with.
Daniel. Just a moment.
He was just standing.
Daniel. There he is. Daniel, my friend.
We should.
Pass this around, please. All right, we are back in session. Thank you. That's number 18.
It's 18.
All right, I got that. All right, let's see, next item on the agenda is the board president's report. In closed session, the following action was taken, with subsequent action being reported in open session as required by law. It was moved by Jessica Shoemaker and seconded by Cami Polis, and approved to expel the following pupils from schools in the district. Student number 185235 for assaulting another student. Student number 105215, tagging walls. Student number 188272 for defiance. Student number 140121, defiance towards a staff member. 140121, assaulted another student. 183884, assaulted another student. 187257, assaulted another student. 182874, drug sales. And 150495, drug purchases. These pupils are expelled and are not eligible to apply for readmission until the date set in their rehabilitation plan. Each pupil will be placed in an alternative program and will be required to complete a specific plan of rehabilitation. The pupils must present proof of completion of the rehabilitation plan prior to or the intake of hearing in order for the Board of Education to approve their placement in the Western Unified School District. And the vote on that item is 5-0. And speaking about the following student, it was moved by George Fuller and seconded by Cami Polis that the following students have completed their terms and conditions of expulsion and have been approved by the Board of Education for readmission into this school in the West Covina Unified District to continue their education. An intake hearing has been held where the student presented that the rehabilitation plan the Board of Education had directed to them to complete has been accomplished in a satisfactory manner. Student number 174384 lift the expulsion and enroll at West Covina High School. 184518, same thing. And 135311, same thing, going to West Covina High School. And the vote on that was 5-0. Are there Board of Education items, George?
Yes, I just wanted to say, number one, I want to thank the principals and staff and students that visited over library and visited six schools. So I just wanted to say I was impressed with them all. It really came to note, though, I was looked at special education at the high school, and the collaborative method is being delivered there, and the collaborative method that's being developed was very much noteworthy, especially in terms of least restrictive environment and how we're trying to move forward. I did mention that the aides and how effective they can be, and I still believe strongly in the relationship that's being developed with the teachers and how they can be used, especially on a full-time basis, where they could be developed an ongoing relationship and be used effectively in the environment. I was very impressed with the aids that Vine was using and the methods that they were using. The comment was that the aides didn't know where the Xerox machine was located, and they're being used all for instruction, and they're in continual use and continually being moved from room to room. The comment was they finally asked the principal for a five-minute break to go to the restroom. They could have a five-minute break to go to the restroom in the rotation, but it was impressive. So, in addition, I went to the NSBA conference, and the one thing I keep coming back with is I was sitting with a gentleman from Missouri that was talking about how troublesome it was his budget was with 12,000 students, and he had a budget of $120 million. And they look at me when I say I have 10,000 students and a budget of $72 million, how they'd look at me. And then Michigan was really upset. The state had cut their budget, and their ADA was cut to $7,700 a student. And I'm sitting there, compared to what's going on in the rest of the country and what's going on in terms of our budgeting and what we have to work with, we're getting a lot out of our money and a lot out of our resources, but they are stretched extremely thin in terms of the other one. And then Nickleby, which will come up later, that's being changed around, but there's one thing for sure that's becoming more and more prevalent throughout the country as a concern, and the what's being set down with Nickleby. I sat there for hours listening to Nickleby, and there's changes being in the process and things, but it's still going to be the law of the land and the standard we're going to need to meet with needs to adjust to it. So.
Yes. I know a lot of us have heard, and we've been so saddened by what's happened at Virginia Tech, and it starts to think, what can we do? And it's National Child Abuse Awareness Month, and there I have some little bookmarks back there, and who knows what could have happened if somebody could have taken some time with this young man. I know it was very extant, but if we could only take a minute to brighten a child's life, we by nurturing, protecting, and praise, and love. And on the other side of this bookmark, it says, it only takes a minute to make a child smile by saying, good job, let's talk. Do you need some help? Sure, I have time. I love you. And so I hope you just take a chance to pick this up, because sometimes we're so overwhelmed by what's happening. And if we could just look at something like this and say, well, I can do something, and just to brighten a child's day. And then it's always good to have information for families. We don't know what was happening with this young man. But on Sunday, the Parents' Place is putting on an information fair and festival for families that have children with disabilities. It's just a way to get out and having families learn, empowering families with the information they need to raise their child. So if you know of a family who has a child with a disability, or you want to learn yourself what's out there, what resources out there, just pick up one of these flyers. It's on Sunday from 1 to 4. We'd love to have you and any of the families that you think can benefit. Thank you.
I also went to NSBA and had a good time. I followed the school law track because what I like about NSBA is hearing on a national level cases that are happening that will eventually affect us. I also am continuing with my master's in governance program. I had a class this weekend, and the highlight of this class was when we had to stand in front of the decade we graduated in. So I was by myself, which was fun. Why, everybody had other people to work with, but I got through it. Obviously, I'm here. And I am also continuing the first weekend of May with the program.
The only thing I want to do, and that was just to let the board know, especially because I know many of you interact with parents, there's been some changes to the ROP because of legislation that was signed, AB 2448. And it actually makes a lot of requirements on ROPs, and the ROP that we're part of doesn't have a problem. You know, it has all these reporting things, evaluation things that we already do, so that's not a problem. And it requires that in a few years, 90% of all students actually have to be high school students in ROPs. Apparently, there's lots of ROPs that don't really service high school students. They serve just adults and others. And ours is at 87% already, so it's really not going to be an issue, because one of the main things, which I think is important for people to realize, especially as school schedules for next year are being developed, is they lifted the ban on 9th and 10th graders being involved in ROP classes. And that's actually something that's very exciting, something we've talked about a lot, because it only allowed limited numbers. And they can participate in 9th and 10th grade as 9th and 10th graders if they work with their counselor and it's part of a plan for their career technical education. You know, so we don't have to wait until they're juniors now to get them involved in something they're really interested in learning about career-wise. You know, they can get in as freshmen. And as long as they work with their counselors, and fortunately we've added counseling, you know, some counseling services at the high school, and hopefully that will help accommodate that. But that's something to tell parents, because, you know, that's something that comes up all the time about career education. You know, their kid wants to find out about medical or, you know, animation or all the different things that are offered by East Mgale Valley ROP, but they can't get into it until, you know, they're already a junior. But they can now if it's part of a plan and, you know, it's part of that process. So please tell parents that.
Danny?
Yes, I haven't had a meeting for a while, and I would like to take this opportunity to thank the board members that went to our April 3rd open house. We haven't had a meeting since then. Thank you guys for attending. Our school is under modernization, as everyone knows, and we made our move for the administration out of the administration building to different rooms, and ASB has moved to portables, and that's taking place over spring break. And it was kind of crazy the first day, but now everything's settled. We're settled. Administration building looks like a new administration building. So that was exciting. That's all done until the end of the year. Events that's been happening at the school, we had a Leo's Fashion Show this past Friday night. All the proceeds, it was a full house that night. All the proceeds going to the parent place. That's what Ms. Wallace was just speaking about, the community resource center. So that's all going there. Our West Side Story, school place opening up the 30th of April on Sunday. Playing on the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of next week. Last night we had our junior parent college night, which all the junior parents were invited to our school for information about college today. And we had a college fair, and we had about 50 to 60 students going to the LA Convention Center, and they were all looking at all the colleges that were there. They all came back bringing bags of stuff from all the schools they wanted to go to from all over the country. So that was pretty cool. I never went to that. I wish I would have been able to go to that, but everyone that went was really excited and glad they did, seeing what they got to see. What else? We have our dance drill and choir went away for spring break. The dance drill went to Hawaii. Choir went on their cruise to Mexico. Yeah. And they took every honor there was to take while on the ship.
Don't even go there. Leave George alone.
I think they're all right. I didn't hear anything bad that happened.
They all came back.
All okay. No.
How much did it cost
them? Our varsity color guard took first place this past Saturday at their last competition for finals, so that's good news. They all brought back gold medals. What else do we have here? our Leadership Symposium, which is an event that we hold to show off our Renaissance program and our ASB Leadership program to the students of the middle schools on the campus. We had this past Saturday. We had a few students come. It was actually a pretty long event. It's about 8 hours from 7, like 8 in the morning until the night, but we had a good turnout, and all the kids liked it. They were really, really excited about going to high school, becoming a freshman, getting involved, just setting their goals early so they're part of the campus life. And so that was successful. Anything else happening? Our dance drill team, they're a new year starting for them. We had tryouts. There's about 30 guys trying out and 55 girls, so it's a big team this year. Choirs, actually all our fine arts are having their tryouts. All getting ready for next year, and our grading period ends next Friday, which is the last 6 weeks of the year, and I'm excited to graduate.
You know, I apologize for going out of order, but there is one thing I did want to mention to the board and the audience that's here. On Sunday morning, I happened to be out and noticed that there was quite a bit going on at the high school on a Sunday morning. And so I stopped by, and they have the basketball program that goes on Sunday mornings, and that's quite active and a lot of young kids. But then happened to notice there was one teacher's car out by one of the portable classrooms by the basketball courts, and I hope I'm not giving something away, but I thought it was pretty special that we have teachers all the time giving of themselves in special time. Apparently there were some students that were, for whatever reasons, unable to participate in a pre-AP or practice AP court classes at the high school. And I don't know if this happened to be for music or not, but they couldn't come on Saturday. So Mrs. Christina Keener made time on her Sunday morning to come and provide for 4 or 5 students the opportunity to take this practice AP exam. And I thought that was a pretty special thing to do. So just wanted to share that with you.
Mr. Cobb?
Yes, sir.
Can I add one thing then?
You betcha.
And now it's kind of out of order, but there are other ones. And it also came, the open house, I want to congratulate. They had the open house of the 8th grade orientation, and were able to attend. And one parent did approach me and said after the experience they were going to send their child to the high school versus Bishop Amott. So I was that that's a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one, and the drill team, I'm sorry, her name escapes me, but I heard a rumor. I didn't confirm this with her, but to keep the drill team going and accommodate everything, she works a part-time job so that she can pay for the expenses that occurred to keep the number of students going. She works a part-time job, then re-donates it back to the school so that they can use it. So we do, Ms. Keener, but also the one who has the 2 weeks also. That's part of that.
All right. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is the items from the floor. And I have one request, a written request, and after this, then I'll honor other people that may want to also address the board. Lisa Ferranti.
Good evening. I appreciate this opportunity to address the board and the district personnel this evening. I'd like to address one of the agenda items, agenda item number 4, the proposal for the 3K6 school. Sorry about that. The initial for this proposed reconfiguration sounds like it might be a wonderful change that would benefit the students' educational growth, but as with any change, there comes questions and in regard to change. Now, as I've talked to a few parents just in passing at Monta Vista site, and they had heard about the potential change, they were actually quite excited. And we love Monta Vista, and they had no problems with their students staying an additional year. But as I spoke to some of them, and they shared their concerns with me, and some of the concerns were if the students at the 3 schools do, sixth grade students stay at their elementary sites, would they receive the same opportunities as the sixth grade students that are on the middle school sites? And some of those questions that arose were, would they have the full science opportunity as they do with the full period of science over at the middle school? Would they have a quality PE sports program, or would they just end up running to the fence in the field like they do now sometimes, and that be considered their exercise? Would they have an elective choice or any possibility of music or art programs? For we know that there's funding required for those items, and would that be available to the students who remain on an elementary site? These are just a few questions. There are many more, but I won't take the time tonight to go through them. But the main concern was, will there be equality between the instructions and programs offered to the students who might remain at an elementary site? I know it's just a discussion item on the agenda tonight, but as the board discussed that tonight, I'd like to, on behalf of myself and other parents, request that if this is something the district looks further into, if a forum or a committee could be constructed to include sixth grade parents as well as sixth grade teachers and anyone else that might be affected by the change. They would love the opportunity to be able to come and ask questions, share concerns, share their input with a possibility of answers back in the same evening or forum setting. Any type of major change with this, most of us consider it to be a significant change. We'd want the community's input on their feelings about a change like that. And whatever change is needed to best offer the best educational opportunities for the students, we're for that. But we do want to make sure that in the process of doing so, that all sixth graders receive an equal opportunity. And thank you for your time this evening.
Anybody else who'd like to address the board at this time? Okay, we'll go on to the next item. The organizational items, the approval of the agenda and consent items. We are going to take item number 18 off of consent for to take a formal vote on. Rob, do I need to take the personnel item off, or are we just going to?
It's an addendum. If you could just announce the, right. There'll be an addendum.
At the, each board member has a corrected personnel item to correct some typographical errors on personnel. We each have one. Does anybody else would like to take an item off of consent?
I would like to take items 5 and 6.
Anybody, I don't think we've got anything to add.
Just the ones we just took off.
And I will give you that courtesy to leave those off. So items 5 and 6 off.
And 18.
5, 6, and 18. 9. Oh, item 9? Five, six, nine, and 18.
I move approval of the consent agenda as presented with the deletions of 5, 6, 9, and 18.
Second that.
Been moved and seconded. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the motion is so ordered. Next item is item number 4, information report regarding the proposals for 3 K-6 schools. Ms. Castillo.
Thank you. Let me begin by sharing with you that during the last 15 months as superintendent of West Covina, it's been my honor and privilege to work closely with schools, look at data and students in terms of how well they're doing, monitoring the situation in terms of enrollment, the progress that our students are making, the progress that we are moving in terms of going towards our goal of reaching the 800 in the timeline that we have committed. And one of the fortunate things about working in West Covina is the fact that the board has a very clear vision in terms of offering a variety of programs so that student needs are met and so that they can be successful. Let me give you an example. One of the first obligations that I had was to make sure that we increased the instructional minutes at the elementary level. And we did that. Another thing we did to strengthen our program towards meeting our goal is we added full-day kindergarten. This next year, we will complete full-day kindergarten in every one of our elementary sites. In addition to that, all of you know that Edgewood has been a program improvement school for the last 4 or 5 years. And we have an opportunity in West Covina to look at a site that will become available. More than likely, the Coronado site that we have known as the continuation school. I'm going to be making a proposal to the board. After my community forums, I wanted to address the fact that I have depended on the principals to communicate to their communities that before this comes up for a vote, we will be there together, the principal and I, to answer questions, to get input, and to solicit any kind of additional information that we need in order to make this decision. So I'm pretty sure that Monte Vista's is going to be May the 3rd, I believe, or 2nd. So that will be coming, and we're going to invite all of the parents and students who are interested in attending that. Let me just tell you that as a superintendent, you have to have an urgency for improvement. One of the things that West Covina has, really been happy about is the fact that we've been improving. But for me, the improvement is not good enough. There's a lot more that we can do because we have that potential in the leadership of the district. We have that potential in the staff. We have that potential in the teachers of the district. And we certainly have that support in the community. And so as a superintendent, I have a tremendous urgency to not let kids fall through the crack, make sure that our kids are going to graduate, make sure that they're graduate ready for post-secondary education. In an effort to do that, there's a lot of things that I think about on a daily basis. For example, we have a middle school of 1,400 and a middle school of 700. Seems to me that running a school of 1,400 and a school of 700 is a little bit different. If I had a magic wand, I would like to have 3 middle schools so that our middle schools range 700, 600, and maybe around 800 or 900. And we have a wonderful opportunity because we're going to finish our modernization. We're going to finish the work on our campuses. I appreciate the tolerance at the high school level in particular. Our high school was not built for the number of students that we have there now. And so as a superintendent, I'm looking at enrollment decreasing in some of our elementary schools, but yet at the middle school and the high school level, it's reaching an enormous amount of students on a campus. In looking at that, it would be very important to consider that sixth grade on a middle school campus is not the same as sixth grade on an elementary campus. And there are certainly trade-offs. Students will still get all of the requirements that the state requires them to have, but we do not have, for example, all of the variety of electives. So as part of this recommendation that I will be making, I'm going to recommend that there will be opt-outs. There will be parents who say, no, my kid, you know, really wants to be in the music program at Edgewood, and we'll say, okay. And we'll have parents who say, no, I want my student to stay at the elementary level, and if there's space, we will do that. But it is really I think an opportunity. All of my experience over the last 30 years with K-6 schools tells me I had 45 schools, elementary schools in LA Unified that I had to supervise. And in those 45 schools, I had the opportunity to look at how the students do when they're elementary sixth grade and when they're at the high school and at the middle school. And there's a tremendous difference. So we have certain things that we're looking at. How do we get Edgewood out of program improvement? The principal and the teachers there couldn't be working any harder. They're doing a great job. But the state keeps raising the bar and changing the way that we meet that. If we reconfigure a school that's 1,400 to a smaller site, I believe that we can be more successful. So part of this is the vision of trying to make sure that we create the situation of choice and a portfolio of options for the entire school community. If we can do that by continuing our charter program, we can continue our K program, we can continue our sixth grade program, we've strengthened instructional minutes, we will have summer school on every site this year. From where I sit, I think that's a wonderful opportunity for West Covina to strengthen its academic programs. It's important for me to tell you that we do have a proposal that will come forward to May 8th regarding physical education, but I've studied this for a very long time, and I don't want you to think that the exact program that's at the secondary school, quote, the middle school, is what you replicate at the sixth. It doesn't work like that. There are trade-offs in terms of the support that we give the kids. By staying at an elementary in sixth grade, they're actually getting more instructional minutes. Our young kids are having a very tough time with transition from one teacher to 6 different teachers. And especially our poorest kids, they have the most difficulty with the amount of adjustment that they have to do when they go from fifth to sixth grade. And these three schools that we have selected for consideration would be feeder schools to the new middle school, which would mean that they wouldn't go to Edgewood and then take them out of Edgewood and then put them in this other school a year from now when we open the middle school. They would naturally feed into a new middle school should the board accept, you know, the proposal that we're going to be having. I recognize that the timeline is short, but I also recognize that it's a wasted opportunity if I don't bring that forward for discussion. And so even though, you know, I write lists of positive and negatives about doing this, I strongly believe philosophically and just from my own experience and observation that this is the best that I can suggest for providing the best quality education to our students. And in speaking to the principals and my cabinet, without a doubt, everybody recognizes that the timeline is short, but it's also an opportunity to offer sixth grade a new look in our school district. Now, let's say a year from now, we find that we're having tremendous success with the kids at these three schools, and sixth grade will cost us money because we have to have portables and some portable classrooms in order to get this accomplished. I believe that that's our job, to trade off what's good for kids in terms of where we put our money. We may have to look at this in terms of long range and short range, but it's more than just adding sixth grade. It's a vision for offering options to our community, options for our kids, not trying to provide the same thing to everyone, because I know that we have kids that are not doing well, and it has nothing to do with Edgewood. I mean, we're having the same thing with Hollandcrest. It's the transition. And as we study the research about the number of times we take kids out of one school and into another, adapting to that for some of our young people is very, very difficult. And so when I come out to these forums in the following couple of weeks before the board actually takes action, I'm going to be a very good listener to what parents have to say. And I hope to accommodate anyone who doesn't agree with it in a way that would meet that parent or that child's need. But I want you to know that it's not without a lot of thought that I'm bringing this proposal forward. And we also have an opportunity. It's hard for me to explain this in the 10 minutes that I want to do this in, but we also have an opportunity to leverage, because we're doing modernization in the school district, this gives us an opportunity to get more state money that we would not have. So while we're doing the high school and looking at the portables that they have, while we're looking at kindergarten and looking at the portables that they have, the state has interesting formulas that I'm going to call on Mr. Frutos, who is the expert in this area, to leverage. And you'll see that not doing this and bringing in some of these portables would cost us more than doing this, which is also an incentive, because I find that it's a one-time opportunity, and I feel very strongly that this is the right thing to do for kids. So unless I'm convinced otherwise, I will probably, you know, at these forums, I will probably bring forward that recommendation to the board. And I'm hoping that through the work of the principals, you know, I have tremendous respect for the work of principals today. They have huge accountabilities and they have huge issues. But I think that we've had some changes in principalship, but I think I have the right team to get this done on behalf of kids, and I hope to bring that forward very soon. So let me just bring forward Mr. Frutos so that he can explain the finance and the facilities that would be the issue surrounding this. And we'll talk about the educational issues more at the forums and also on May 8th, which you're welcome to attend. Mr. Frutos.
Thank you, Ms. Castillo. We're going to wait for a second to get this system started.
Are you just showing what we have up here?
Pretty much, yeah. One of the things that we want to present to you is a very ambitious concept plan for facilities for the district. As our superintendent said, we've been trying to figure out a way to leverage the funding that the district is eligible for in order to accomplish three different things that together make a significant and lofty goal. Let me give you a little bit of background. Our school is under a variety of eligibility programs with the state. The site that the state identifies as a growth site, meaning the site that is eligible for construction, is our high school. The high school has been growing. The state doesn't recognize fluctuations in the other sites. They do recognize the high school. And there are regulations that say that because of that, at the high school, we can build. However, the need came for three different programs at the same time. The notion of construction at the high school, the notion of our full-day kindergarten program and the idea of a K-6 program at three schools, which is what Ms. Castillo introduced right now. So what I want to give you is a brief notion of what this project will look like from a facilities and financing perspective. If you look at the upper part of this thing, it's a diagram of basically our schools. The high school has the ability to build, and we have funding for it at the state level that we can match and receive. They have a need to remove some portables. They also have a need to construct some classrooms. So part of the proposal at the high school is to eventually phase out some portables and to construct a facility that will have approximately six classrooms. That allows us to begin asking the state for money. However, because of the way the state funding works, it also allows us to get money for Merlinda, which needs three portable classrooms in order to work on their K-6 program. The same happens at West Cove. West Cove needs three portables in order to prepare them for the K-6 program. Going to Monte Vista, they need rooms. However, the facility has enough open space that we would not need rooms at this point. However, because we get a fixed amount for engineering and design, the money is there, so we would ask them to just draw squares, kind of blank squares like that, in case in the future that site needs additional capacity, part of the program. Cameron, for full-day kindergarten, doesn't need portables. Vine needs one, and Orangewood needs two. Now, this is the simple part. This is where it gets a little complicated, but I'm going to go as fast as I can to confuse most of you very quick, but tell you what we're doing. Basically, the upper portion is the way we get eligibility for the district. Suffice it to say that it's based on a number of units. We have enough units to do what I just mentioned. How does it work? Well, at the very low part of the chart on the right, you see an amount of $6.2 million. That's what the state is saying that as of right now, they would accept as a total global project for us, meaning that we would need to contribute three, they would contribute three. What we asked the state, however, to do is to look at all our portable needs and consider them facilities for the entire district. Hence the idea of a global plan. So all these portables that I mentioned before would become part of a district facilities plan. And the state doesn't care about that too much as long as we explain it in an appropriate way. This is eligible money for a new construction project, but it benefits the entire district. What that does is that it begins to give us the ability to put classrooms at multiple schools as long as we construct at the high school. We asked the state one more thing in addition to that. Since we don't want to contribute $3 million, we just finished right now a project at the high school that has been a significant and visible project, which is the improvement of our athletic facility at the high school. That amount, what we're asking the state to do, is to allow it to be part of the match. That just reduced our contribution from $3.2 million to less than half. The second part of the scenario is that initially what the state did is they said, we cannot give you more than a few portables. But now we've asked to give us portables for all the facilities, and what this does, it allows us to get the money from the state, use the monies that we've been spending for the last year as matching funding. In summary, originally when we were going to purchase the portables for K-6 implementation, we were looking at an approximate cost of between $800,000 and $900,000. What we want to propose to the state, and that hopefully our board will see as a favorable project, is the addition of seven classrooms at the high school as a single story. And I always forget the term. Stuart, what are they called? Projected classrooms or prototype type of classrooms, which is a specific type of single-story facility that is modular and fairly able to be configured. Two classrooms for our bleacher project, landscape and parking. The track becomes part of the contribution of the district, and it allows us to build nine classrooms for full-day kindergarten and our K-6 project. Now, what this also does is that at this point, the district contribution would have to be about $1.5 million. However, part of the project at the high school is the resurfacing of the center portion of the school, which we were going to do at the end of modernization, as well as some outside paint and some capital equipment replacements, like some of the boilers and things like that. What we are asking the state is that all that money be considered part of the district match. So what we want to accomplish is that at the end of the project, instead of spending $900,000
for the 8 or 9 buildings for full day K and K-6, that we spend $493,000 and we get not only all those buildings, but a 7 classroom facility at the high school. The state appeared somewhat favorable on the initial concept. We're working with our consultant to try to make sure that all this is done in an appropriate way, and our architect appears to be able to do it on time. Now, what I mentioned to the superintendent is this is a very ambitious plan. There is a possibility that the state would say, absolutely not, this is too little contribution from the district, at which point scenario 3 would come into play, which is back to basics. We just get the portables for full day K and for K-6, and the lofty goal of the high school continues to be a discussion topic. So I want to make sure that I'm very clear. We're going to try to do this if the board approves it. If it doesn't, we continue with our portable acquisition, but the big projects would come back to you as a more conventional type of facilities financing plan. And that's all I have. Questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions? Comments?
About the whole thing or just
sure.
The facilities plan?
No, the whole thing.
I don't think it's been a secret. I mean, from the very beginning that I've been on the board, I've supported the K-6 model for education. I think when our, I'm the last board member that's on this board that I wasn't part of when we went bankrupt and had to get the school loan from the state, but I was part of that paid it off. And, the reality is the configuration that we got at that time was all based on finances and wasn't based on academics or, anything like that. It was all done because the board at that time had spent too much money and couldn't keep going. Since that time, we opened up Pollencrest. And I remember when we opened up Pollencrest, there were a lot of people that were very upset. I remember hearing them that they were going to be that people were upset that we were opening Pollencrest and 700 or 600 kids at the time and all this. And I know afterwards some of those people came to me and they realized that we had to open it because Edgewood was just getting too big. And we were losing kids as well whose parents thought that Edgewood was getting too big. And we've opened a couple charter schools since then. We've approved 2 charters to give parents more choice. I've always supported the K-6 model. I think 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds, it's nice to keep them young one extra year before they go into the middle school environment, and I think it's beneficial. That's always been my gut feeling. But when Mary Breskin was here, she gave us that research, too, that backs that up, that it does benefit them, academically as well, to be in that environment. And if you look at the 1K school we have, I think one of the reasons that Edison does so well at the middle school level, that it's our top performing middle school portion if you take out the 6, 7, 8, is because of the transition. There isn't one. They're separated, by a fence, but they have a continual transition and a consistent school environment. So I think the longer you can keep kids in that kind of environment, I think the more beneficial it is. Obviously, we'll get feedback from the forums, but it's not a secret to anyone on the board. I've always wanted K-6 schools or to give that option to parents to keep their kids in that K-6 environment, which I think is a little more nurturing, and the research shows is better academically. So I'm for it. I don't know if I view this like the full-day kindergarten where we'll be able to phase it in. It says we approve phase 2, but this is actually the third phase because we had it before California. It's actually 3 phases if you count the pilot. But, I don't know if we'll be able to expand the K-6 model. But, obviously I'm 100% at having a proposal before us at our May meeting that we can approve.
I'm definitely for it, and I appreciate all of the effort Mr. Fructos put in trying to consolidate all of the projects into one, and hopefully the state would go for that. So, and we could see some benefit at the high school too,
yeah.
Because that is, they are very overcrowded there. But when you have so many students at a middle school, and they move so much more, they're so physical that it seems like more students. So if there's any way to take some of those students off, I think we could only benefit those students. So I'm all for opening a K-6 and another middle school.
Mm-hmm.
George? Just a couple of questions. How would the sixth grade be instructed? Would it be a core model, a self-contained classroom,
At the elementary school, it will be a self-contained classroom. At the middle school, we're going to try to continue coring.
Okay. And then personnel-wise, how are you going to...
Personnel-wise, we're looking at teacher credentials, volunteers, people who are interested in moving from Edgewood to an elementary school. There are teachers that we have to place because they have more seniority than others, so we'll be following all the rules in terms of the contract and seniority rules. We believe that there are enough non-tenured teachers that, you know, have been in our school district that this will be fine. And at the end of the day, we still have openings and we still have the need. So I don't think that doing this is going to be detrimental in terms of people going out the door as much as, you know, some may be leaving Edgewood for sure.
Okay. Once the sixth grade teacher is transferred to the elementary school, we still have, from the best I can see, each elementary school kind of runs its own choice of classrooms and things. So they go into the mix, or will they be sixth grade teachers that are going to a self-contained classroom? What happens if a first grade teacher wants to go teach a sixth grade class?
These principals are going to be working like they do every year to get teacher preferences, you know, whenever possible. We try to put a teacher, you know, based on first credential, their strength, and also their willingness to teach at a certain grade level. So we will not change the process by which we do that.
You know, in listening to the conversations and things, the research I've read, it gets somewhat 50-50. I appreciate what Mrs. Lace Castillo has done. I've read some of the other information. But, you know, when you get right down to it, middle school is just difficult. And it seems like sixth grade really gets kicked around a lot with numbers. You know, they get moved out of elementary school, not so much that it's good educationally, but they just run out of room, so they'll move it over to the middle school, and we'll make a 6, 7, 8, and then they get moved around there. It just seems it's a difficult age to deal with, difficult age to educate and to deal with. In answer to what Mrs. Lace Castillo said, though, I have watched Edgewood, and I've watched the students, and I've watched the staff, and I've watched the administration year after year work hard and gain the gains that they have made and done the things they've done, and I've sat here. It just seems like they're always on the cusp, and I don't mean that. I mean that it's just always there. I can only think of the morale of everyone that's involved. They try so hard, and then we have all the things that are going on. And I don't necessarily disagree with No Child Left Behind. It's an accountability model that needs some tweaking that we can measure ourselves by, the API we can measure ourselves by. But it just seems that it goes in there. And when I sit there, what can we as a board do to support the school? And I agree, we need to cut it down to where we can deal with. And I think if the staff says that moving the sixth grade out will relieve some of the pressure, and I agree, I think it's come time to separate the two middle schools and use our resources that are available to move them in so that we can get more of a limelight on it, more limelight on the student. Not only that, I've been going to the graduate school. I went up to San Francisco. I've gone to CSBA conferences. Bottom line, I want to be able to shelter our resources and shelter our people, because if this program improvement is not going away, and if we don't do it, somebody else is going to do it for us. It's just plain and simple as that. We're going to wake up one morning and somebody's going to come in and say, guess what, we're going to take over, and here's the way it's going to be run. If we don't start finding some solutions on our own to start meeting these demands upon us, we're not going to be able to protect our staff. We're not going to be able to protect our students. It will come out from something else. So we have to be able to show this. And it means when they say restructuring or finding another mean, they don't mean just a Band-Aid. They mean really something that's radical, that says, look, here's what we've done. We've come in. And it becomes another method to deal with it. So I support the K-6, and I also support the concept to the two middle schools. Begin moving into that area to allow our staff, our students, and everyone, parents, to prosper on it.
Um,
Boy, I tell you what, this is really fascinating and sort of part on this development a little bit, just on a, just a touch. But, you know, I go back, you know, if we can go back 40 years, and when I was in maybe in sixth grade or thereabout, and yeah, maybe longer.
You were.
But anyway, we grew up with this. We grew up with K-6, and that's just what I'm familiar with. Go up 20 more years, and now I've got a fifth grader who I've been told that, you know, second to none is the way to go, and the middle school concept is the best program that we've got available. But my, you know, my fifth grade baby, you know, is, I'm sorry, in my mind, as a parent's mind, he's just not ready to go just yet. And he happened to be a bit younger than most of the other kids, but I would have preferred that he stayed in that. And I had actually told my wife that if it came to that and it wasn't what we'd wanted, that we would certainly consider another opportunity. And then he went to the first day of sixth grade. And I told my wife, day to day. It's just day to day. Got to bear with it. Give it a chance. It'll work.
Right.
And this was at Edgewood. At the time, there was 1,400, maybe more than that, 1,600 kids at Edgewood. Holland Crest wasn't open. And he came back after the first day, and he was thrilled to death. I mean, this is an incredible opportunity. Yeah, we said, okay, sure thing. Second day, same thing. And within 2 weeks, you know, we sort of bought into the same process because he enjoyed it. He adapted well, and the kids are certainly adaptable. And the staff there was great, and they did have it more cordoned off, the sixth graders separate from the seventh and eighth graders than we do now. But anyway, it was a good program. We're very, very satisfied with it. And then they opened Holland Crest and he moved over there. But what I've been mostly for in this whole term that I've been involved is giving choice and giving opportunity. And I look at this as another way of doing that. There are some kids who will adapt well. There are other parents who won't adapt well. Catch what I said there? There are kids that will adapt well. There are parents that won't. And so, you know, we like to be flexible to both in giving the best opportunity as best that we can. So
94 again.
Yeah, 94. Carson, where's that? There was one concern that I did have and had had a chance to talk to some parents concerned. As we've done a sixth grade orientation, I think, so far this year, Jim? Yeah, so far. And so we've done a pretty good sales job right now with the kids that they've been at, that they're going to go to sixth grade and it's going to be a great thing. How are we going to go back and tell them, well, you know, on second thought, maybe it's not going to be quite so good? And I think that that's something that we probably need to address in the forums.
Because we're going to do the other sales job.
Yeah, we're going to do it. Well, I think we may have made our sales job much more difficult. And that was certainly an expression from some parents that I'd met with over the last couple of days, that their concerns were. But this is an ambitious program that I think we're going on. And I applaud the district for moving it. And I look forward in hearing more about it and hearing more from what's coming through the forums. And we certainly will keep our ears to the ground, too. Is there anything else? Anything you want to add?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is item number 5 and 6, Mr. Spence.
On number 5, I just wanted to get from staff, if they could send it to me, the state standard that the Pioneer Electronics Company is going to meet as when they present to the students at Edgewood on energy conservation.
We'll be happy to do that.
If you could get that to me, that'd be great.
Yes, we will do that. Thank you, Mr. Spence.
I'll go ahead and move this item.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Any objections? Motion so ordered. Item number 6, Mr. Spence.
Yeah, I pulled this off, and it's not a fear that kids are going to disappear while they're on exchange programs or anything like that, like some board members have been concerned about.
Not
but,
on the high seas, anyway.
It's a comment that I made before, and it deals with item number B here, which is our exchange with our long-running exchange with students in Japan. And the one part that has always, you know, and I brought this up when the Japanese students were here, and I've brought this up every year the Japanese students are here, is I don't have a problem with kids going to Japan and kids from Japan going here. it just would make sense if we actually at the high school had a program that taught Japanese or, you know, that it was directly related to course content. The German class is, you know, I know we have Chinese, and obviously I think we should probably have a Chinese exchange of some nature. But, you know, it just seems to me that at some point, you know, there seems to be enough interest of students going to Japan that there would be enough interest to have some kind of curriculum that focuses around Japan, Japanese language, or Japanese culture, something. It just seems to me that while we're given a great experience, that I think students would have a greater experience if we had something at the high school that related this all to things that they were learning throughout the year. That's just, I'll say that again, for whatever it's worth. And I will go ahead and move this item.
Been moved. Suspend second by Justice Shoemaker. Any objections? Motion so ordered. Item 9.
I just needed from AP U.S. History, the book is The Earth and Its People, A Global History, and below it we have AP World with American Pageant. Was that a typo and the book should be switched?
She knows. She was a student. She remembers. I'm pretty sure she's right. We'll correct that. Thank you, Ms. Shoemaker.
Okay, so that's just changing that?
Yes.
I'll second it.
Been moved and seconded. Any objections? Motion so ordered. Item 12, an information report regarding the status report on the implementation of response to intervention, RDI.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to call on staff, beginning with Ms. Pickett, to give an introduction. As you know, the board requested some information. Even though we're at the early stages of this, we would like the board to have some more information on it. So with that, Ms. Pickett.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Castillo. As you may know, the Individuals with Disabilities Educational Improvement Act of 2004 recommended that states and school districts utilize another approach to dealing with students with learning difficulties. And the approach that they recommend is called Response to Intervention, or RTI. And the difference between RTI and what we currently do is, with RTI, there's a strong emphasis on immediate targeted change in the teaching and learning environment for students who are having trouble learning. And this emphasis is really placed on the early grades so that we can catch them before they fall far behind. I have to emphasize to you that we are really at the very preliminary learning stages. We are not experts in this by any means. In fact, the LA County Office of Education has just begun to offer workshops on RTI, and they're really targeted to schools with lower deciles than ours, but we managed to squeeze into one of their workshops in February, and we're able to send two school teams, one from California and one from Cameron. So we've invited Mrs. Cheryl Lessiger tonight, the principal of California, to give us a short presentation of what she learned at that workshop. Mrs. Lessiger.
Thank you, Ms. Pickett. I appreciated the opportunity to attend LACO's RTI training, and the staff that I took with me came back very excited as well. Okay, response to intervention is used as an early intervention approach geared to all students. It includes many levels of differentiated interventions using research-based strategies and programs. Students receive immediate interventions before it falling too far behind academically. Okay. The goals of RTI are, one, the early identification of students with academic and behavioral difficulties, strategic application of appropriate interventions, and ongoing monitoring and assessment of progress. The use of a pyramid is part of RTI. There are many pyramids used to depict RTI, but this is the pyramid that we were taught at the training. The pyramid gives a visual approximation of the number of students served at each level, as well as the intensity of the interventions provided. At grade level, this is where the universal interventions are provided to all students. These interventions are preventative and proactive, and usually are successful for 80 to 90% of our students. An example of a grade-level intervention is the full implementation of Open Court and all its components noted for its differentiation, which is basically excellent instruction and curriculum. Benchmark level, this intervention is provided for some students who are at risk who need a more focused intervention. An example might be the Waterford computer program. At the strategic level, this is a targeted group intervention for a few students who have not responded to the benchmark level interventions. Examples include small group instruction and before and after school tutoring. At the intensive level, these are interventions for individual students not responding to previous programs and additional support. These students may be grouped with special education groups for more individualized instruction. This is a blending of special ed and general education services for perhaps 1% of our students. West Covina Unified School District is in the early stages of RTI. We've sent two elementary school teams, and we'll be sending two middle school teams to intensive training. The expectation after training is for each school to develop a pyramid of intervention and a plan to implement RTI with the district office support. It is a work in progress, and we are beginning to have conversations with our staffs. The purpose is to provide targeted and documented interventions to all students. The focus is on school-wide reform, using what research tells us about improving and increasing student achievement. As with all programs, strategic implementation determines the quality of the results. Okay, thank you.
If you have any questions, that basically is a brief introduction to what this is. We have not formulated a plan for the district because we're still in the early stages. In fact, as you heard Mrs. Pickett say, there's only been two schools that have gone for initial training. But it is something that we are looking to expand on as we get more information and more training for our schools and our teachers. So if you have any questions at this time, we'd be happy to entertain those. Also, you need to know we'll come back as we make progress towards a full implementation of this program.
George, you'd ask for this to be brought forward.
I appreciate what's bringing it forward. I appreciate the update and what's been brought about. I also appreciate going down, taking the time to go down to the county and begin to get the training. When I was on the visits, it seemed like the principals were, as a whole, we're attuned to RTI, whether officially or unofficially we're using it. It seems like the two schools that we've sent are officially onto it. But there's some form of intervention going on now in terms of trying to go forward. Is that correct?
Yes.
Right. When do we see us going more on a formal basis?
Right now we have piloted the two schools that had the most people trained. The principals had information, and they are all doing some form of this, but without the tremendous in-service that's needed to do it right. And so we're going to see what happens with these two schools for the remainder of this year, and starting next year, working with the principals, find out who's ready to go to the next step. It really is something that has to be embedded in what they're doing already, and the principals that have been enthusiastic about this are basically, the ones that went to the training because they had people with them to carry that message back to the school, to the other teachers. And so as those workshops become available, more and more schools will go forward. But at this time, I can't really tell you, specific date, even though they all have components of it.
Okay. Now, the one thing that's come up in terms of RTI, do we see it envisioned some areas are using this as their special education introduction? That, in other words, that if you go through the stages and you get down to the intensive stage and there's nothing happened, at that point, rather than the assessment, you're moving the child into the special education and moving them in. But the idea that you will have to move fewer people in because you've made your interventions, and then later you don't have to go through the whole assessment delay to get somebody into special education, you can move them in quicker. Do we envision anything along that line?
Let me ask staff, what their feeling is about that. Christine, do you have?
Yeah, the psychologist, a couple of them, and myself have gone to training a little bit, and other states have fully
engulf themselves in this model, and we're studying those ways that they've set it up. I think that what we're hearing is that there would still be assessment at the end of the pyramid, but it gives us vast information about what works for the child. It eliminates the idea that the child hasn't had correct instruction along the way, or possibly, you know, changed schools or any of those other factors. And then when we get to that point, then we will be probably doing different kinds of assessment. There are still possibility that a student may not qualify for special ed and may still need to have more interventions all through their school career and may not be a learning disabled student. But all of that information that we gather from the stages will be part of the assessment process.
Well, I think in asking, if I can, as you know, 50-60% of the special education population is what? Learning disabled, specified speech learning disabled, meaning they've got something, reading, everything that's there, just reading, wiring isn't set up, the reading isn't coming across as they should, or math, is my understanding. Do you foresee us reducing the number of students in that delay period? Up to now, the model has been wait 2 years to get behind, and then there's always seems to be a catch-up. Do you see the number dwindling as to learning disabled because of the earlier interventions and then more or quicker action sooner?
My feeling is that the federal government went to this model for 2 reasons. Number one, because the research shows that many of the kids that are identified as learning disabled are not. They just had failed reading instruction in the lower grades, didn't get the intensity and the support that they needed. And then also because it does hold promise in reducing the number of students that are placed and giving those interventions sooner and will lower the cost.
And lower the costs and allow us to focus more. Okay. I guess I appreciate it. That's what I wanted to see where we're going. It was there, and I tend to agree with Dr. Smith and Ms. Pickett and Mrs. Lace Castile that we are, it becomes a mechanism to allow the student for earlier intervention, probably more success, and be able to come about without having to enter into the special ed. Situation, and it seems like it is always the delay situation, you know, always being behind 2 years and then having to spend the next 10 years trying to fill that gap. So the more faster we can move, the better, I think.
In the states that have already fully implemented RTI, what percentage of students do they now have in special ed? And on the model that we were looking at, it was said that 80 to 90% of the students would be met in that bottom rung of the pyramid. So there could be 20% in those upper rungs. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what do you foresee being in the top rung, in the special ed rung? Right now, do we have 7% in our district? I know some districts have 11, but do we have 7% in our district?
We're just under 8% mm-hmm. identified, and the state criteria, they show a band of between 8 and 12% as being in the area. So we're on the low end because we've been working interventions for a while in our district already. We've been very proactive, and that's why you're seeing it out in the schools. Those students wouldn't stay in that 20% area, they would go into an intervention specifically targeted to the area they're struggling in, and then the monitoring would take place, and if they succeed, they would come back. If they started to do well, they might stay there longer until they really get going again, and if they didn't do well, then they might go up to a more intensive. I can't tell you exactly what we're going to be planning for in the program curriculum piece. We're working on some of those things now. We're watching what other districts are using, looking at research-based materials.
The county was saying that, or what I heard you saying in the training, is that sometimes there'd be students that are in those top rungs but not identified as special ed, they would be being educated together at times. Is that what I heard?
Mm-hmm.
And is there a problem with commingling the funds that way?
No. Our school plans already had for several years now the ability to use and blend our staffs to meet the needs of the students. And frequently you'll see an RSPA going to a classroom and you'll discover them that student, so they're getting personal services. And then we hope as things stabilize and have been identifying students that we'll be able to continue to blend students together and use the expertise of special ed to get those targeted strategic interventions in place. And it will give us a lot of information about the student before we at some point just determine whether or not they need to be identified as having a disability. It
would be nice to bring those services into the regular, the 80 to 90% too, into that classroom, into that arena. So that's, it sounds like that flexibility is in there. That's really nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Number 18, a declaration of need for fully qualified educators.
I'll move approval.
Was there a second?
Yeah, just
okay.
I move by Mr. Spencer, seconded by Mr. Maker. Are there any objections? That takes us to the end of our agenda. Terminate the Board of Education discussion.
I didn't take it off the agenda, but I noticed we are applying for PIP funding again. You know, a couple years ago when the PIP programs that we had ended, I tried to get the board to ante up some of the other money and divert it from another place it was going, and wasn't able to get the votes, but I'm glad we're able to apply again for the PIP funding.
Anything else? There's one other thing I forgot to point out during your discussion on the K-6 issues and the funding on all of that. I mean, when we try to go to the city for funding to help us out with the track and field program, we weren't as successful as we'd hoped, at least not at this point in time. We may want to now go to them and see whether or not that they're willing to put up any kind of money for, you know, I mean, with the, you were talking about classrooms and the bleachers and that, and maybe we can kind of coordinate a program with them. Another contribution, I don't know whether the state considers city contributions or if it just looks as a dollar's a dollar, I don't know. But, I mean, if that's something.
Don't answer. Are you talking to me? Were you addressing me, Mr. Cox?
Don't ever.
No, Mr. Cox, absolutely we will do that. Mr. Frutos has weekly conversations with them, and at any point that they wish to enter into these discussions with us, we will be pleased to inform the board about those.
If you're not doing anything, maybe you could do it tomorrow morning.
Mr. Frutos, do not answer. Thank you, Mr. Cox.
Next board meeting is May 8th. Look forward to seeing you all here then. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.